Hi everyone and welcome to Lit Radio Podcast. I'm Thea and today I'm joined by Dr. Dietrich van Thiel. We'll talk about his book, Brilliant Data, how human-centered AI can transform financial services into becoming a driver of value and inclusion. Dietrich is the founder and CEO of AdviceRobo. He develops advanced behavioral AI systems used by banks, neobanks, retailers, and telecom operators to better understand and support their customers. Brilliant Data explores the impact of AI and behavioral economics on banking and financial services. It showcases the potential for financial service companies to gain better insights into risk and opportunities before they emerge and become more inclusive. Hi, Dietrich. It's a great pleasure to have you with us on the Lit Radio podcast. How are you today?
Thank you, Thea. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, it's great to have you. So before we talk about your book, Brilliant Data, could you tell us a bit more about your background, how that led you to your company, AdviceRobo, and also what obstacles you had to face yourself when dealing with banks?
Yeah, that's a great question. My background sits at the intersection of behavioral science, entrepreneurship, and financial innovation. A combination that naturally led to founding AdviceRobo. And from the start, we positioned ourselves as pioneers of human-centered AI, really long before the industry recognized its value. And the biggest obstacle in this journey was mindset, because banks were deeply attached to legacy scoring and transactional ways of thinking. And actually, because of all the compliance threats across Europe, but also the wider world, they also kicked out the innovation very much. So we had to show them that understanding human behavior was not a nice to have, but the core of the next era of financial services. And in that mindset shift is where we found the biggest obstacle.
Absolutely. And is that why you decided to write the book, Brilliant Data?
Yes, absolutely. I wrote Brilliant Data to define the category of human-centered AI, because the industry needed a clear vision, a map, showing how behavioral intelligence and AI can transform finance from purely focused on transactions to human. And the book establishes the philosophy and the framework behind what we at AdviceRobo have been doing for years. So that's why I wrote the book, to share that and to share a path forward to the world and to the executives in banking.
Yeah. And before we talk more about the book and what challenges it's trying to tackle and what resolutions it's offering, and because this is a book podcast, could you talk to us a little bit about the whole writing process? What was it like to write the book? How did you format it? Yeah, tell us a little bit more about the writing for anyone who is listening to us today and might be thinking of writing a book.
Yeah, thanks for this question. It's also very interesting, because the writing in itself was a process of distilling pioneering work. We have been working in this area of human-centered AI with our models, our insights, and our experience for more than a decade. And to shift this all into accessible story was what I thought was a very challenging but also inspirational writing process. So I wanted the book to articulate not just what we do, but especially why it matters, and to claim the intellectual ground for the next generation of finance, which I call Banking 5.0. So for writers who consider writing a book, it's a very inspirational but also difficult process to translate, well, the facts that you have into an accessible and enjoyable story for the many people.
Yeah, could you explain a little bit more on why you found it so difficult? What were the main challenges?
Well, the main challenges is that me personally and the people with whom I work are very passionate about what we do, about this human-centered AI, about working with new data sources, working with AI, testing things, training things, seeing that a lot of things don't work. And then suddenly you find things that do work and that lead you into new worlds to experience and to further innovate in. And this to translate this passion into paper is, well, that's especially challenging because the reader not necessarily has the same passion I have, but you still want to, well, come that across. So translating that was kind of the biggest challenge. And I decided to do that by merging two stories, the story of the research, the models, the human-centered AI shift in banking, and the insights from that, with the other story of my entrepreneurial journey that helps the reader in a step-by-step process to understand why we do things, why insights matter, also why we experience things that didn't work, how we cope with disappointments. So that translating my passion into paper was kind of the most difficult thing for me.
Yeah, very interesting. Yeah, I think you're right. That's probably the biggest challenge, to put all of that passion on a paper and in a whole book. But I do agree that using your own entrepreneurial story was a really good move, because it really showcases that everything you talk about actually works and why it can be so successful. And now let's talk about the book and the challenges that it tackles. So, Dietrich, why are so many people and also businesses excluded from financial services today?
Yeah, that's very simple actually, and it's very disappointing that nobody else saw that before. Because the reason is very simple. Finance still uses a lens that was invented in the 1920s, more than a century ago, where traditional models focused on financial ratios to decide if people were or were not able to get a loan, if they were credit worthy, if they could afford it. It was a very strict focus on financial ratios. These models were never built to understand human behavior. And as a category leader in human-centered AI, we've shown that if you shift that lens, that exclusion isn't caused by risky people, but predominantly by poor visibility. Because with brilliant data, those same people that were excluded before become clear, knowledgeable, and financeable. Just because we shift the lens from financial ratio only focused to their behaviors.
And is that the banking 5.0 that you talk about in the book? And could you talk a little bit more about how can AI and behavioral science can re revolutionize banking?
Yeah, exactly. That's the exact essence of Banking 5.0. When you merge AI's predictive power with behavioral science human insight, you unlock a completely new category of intelligence. We built Advice Robo around this idea. It's the foundation of Banking 5.0, finance that truly understands people and not just their transactions.
And how is that done? Can you explain to our listeners who might not be so familiar with how can those technologies be used? How can AI and behavioral science be used in banking so more people get access to the finance they need?
Yeah, so imagine a twin, Emma and Anna. Emma and Anna are both 38 years old, have the same type of job in the same company, and both earn the same type of income. But Emma is very risk averse. She's very cautious what to do with her money. She's making budgets all the time to make ends meet, while Anna, her sister, is really overconfident. She likes to buy stuff when she sees it. She's driven by impulse, and she likes to have fun in life and doesn't care less about what impact it is for their financial life. These twins are seen by traditional instruments as exactly the same. But in real life, they are not. They're completely different. And where Anna, as being very overconfident, is not good for having a loan and repay that very, very prominently, her sister Emma is. That's a result of this new approach. And we are able to do that in today's world because there is an ocean of data available, of behavioral data. And with the technology of AI, we are able to analyze this data instantly. So we are able to build super deep profiles that can make these kind of differentiations and see people for who they really are, and not only for their financial ratios.
Fascinating. And yeah, I think that really shows the benefits to the end consumer and also small businesses who, well, at the moment they might not have access to the finance they need to develop. But let's look from the point of view of the banks and the financial institutions, because they might be wondering, well, what do we gain from this? So, well, what improvements do we see in terms of banking to their financial services when they apply AI and behavioral science?
Yeah, this is a core question because I mentioned earlier that the mentality issue was the biggest blocker in driving these kind of transformations. So what we currently do, and what I do in a lot of executive briefings that I give to C-leaders across the world, is show them exactly this. What's the benefit from this for your institution, and how do you get it that far that you can benefit from the benefit? And institutions is what I say, and what I can prove also, that adopt human-centered AI see measurable shifts in three areas. The first one is stronger inclusion, right? Because behavior makes thin file customers visible. Institutions are able to, on average, accept 30% more new customers, new to credit customers. People that were not seen before, like a lot of women in developing countries that were outside the financial system before, but can now very, very responsibly be included. Stronger inclusion is the first point. The second point is lower risk, because all these data drives to early behavioral indicators that enable us to see risks in a very, very, very early stage. And it enables our customers, the institutions that we work with, to mitigate these risks before they actually happen, and to mitigate them very, very targeted, because they are driven on, and they're based on, very deep profiles of behavior. And the third area of improvement is higher trust and lifetime value, because customers feel understood. They feel the company understands what they need, when they need it, and how they need it. And that drives lifetime value, that drives engagement, and that drives customer satisfaction. So it's stronger inclusion, lower risk, higher trust and lifetime value. And these, in my opinion, are not marginal gains. They are step change improvements that redefine competitiveness of these companies.
Yeah. And so I think probably the risk factor here is very interesting because probably for a lot of banks now and traditionally, they've they're not giving financial support to some individuals just because they think it's a huge risk. So you're saying now using AI and behavioral science, that risk can actually be mitigated and actually more people can get access to the support they need. But have you got any measurable results? I know in the book you talk about declining default rates. So have you got any measurable results for the banks when they use banking 5.0?
Yeah, so great question. Because the proof, of course, is in the pudding eventually. When it comes to stronger inclusion, the results that we see are an increase of acceptance rate with 30%. When it comes to lower risk, on average, the result is a 20% decline in default costs. And when it comes to higher trust and customer lifetime value, it's an improvement, and this is difficult to measure because you never know when it stops the measurement of the lifetime value. But what we see, for example, with lenders that we work with in developing countries like Indonesia and Mexico, is that their customers used to switch continuously, driven on price. So every new loan or card they wanted to take was started by a search in the market. And we see that this in 80% of the customers in their base now shifted to first inquiry to the lender itself, if he could provide something that fits the needs that the customer has. So that's, I think, also a very strong indication across different geographies that it really works to see people for who they are. And build your offering and tailor your offering towards that.
Yeah, I think those are some very impressive numbers that you're sharing, which again shows the benefit for both the customer and the financial services. But could you share with us some specific tools that can be utilized today by banks to make their services more inclusive? Probably services that you at AdviceRobo offer, anything specific so we actually understand how it works in practice.
So to drive this transformation, it's a strategy, and the roadmap indeed contains areas in your processes that you transform with this technology. And you can transform them with what we call AI agents to make them more efficient. But if you infuse the AI agents with behavioral type of solutions like behavioral scoring or psychometric data, then the agents become a tool for inclusion and risk reduction, and not only for customer effectiveness, for operational effectiveness. So we focus most of the work on injecting behavioral insights into AI agents, also delivering AI agents. Well, the tools offered on top of that are things like behavioral scoring, predictive risk monitoring, life-centric guidance engines that help people when life moments take place, when they start working or get children, to tailor the offering around that to help them. Hyper-personalized product matching is a tool that we offer. And these tools are ready today, and they position banks and embedded finance providers to lead in this area. And what we typically see is that the ones that lead are the ones that have entered the industry later. So it's super apps in Asia, it's mobile wallets, it's e-commerce portals like Amazon that use these kind of technologies to build their experience around the customers. And of course, it's neobanks also in a lot of countries. We see that the traditional banks still are a bit lagging in this. And they work predominantly on the old-fashioned way and are doing POCs in this area. But I would really challenge the leadership over there now to also transform and follow what the new entrants, the embedded finance players in this world, are currently doing already.
Yeah, it's obviously with all the benefits of using those tools. But earlier in the conversation, you mentioned that the main problem comes from the mindset that banks and financial services are having in terms of who they give financial support to. So, do you think that finally the banking and the financial industry is ready to embrace this change?
Yeah, again, a very good question. Thank you for this. And the answer is, I think the industry is getting ready. And the front runners, like I mentioned, are already adopting human-centered AI. Many of them in partnership with us. So we work with the Grab-likes, the Grab apps in Asia, for example, with the Amazons. And we see that they fully embrace this kind of technology. And the others will follow. I also truly believe that traditional banks will follow because the shift from transactional to human-centered finance is simply inevitable. Banking 5.0 isn't just a trend, it's a category shift. And if you don't follow that category, you'll be very soon out of business. So I truly believe that the industry is getting there. Some are faster than others, which always is the case. But we're coming to a tipping point now where you have to adopt or where you, well, will be left out.
Yeah, I think that's very interesting because I think traditionally it's been banks who are setting the rules. So is it finally the consumers who are having the power to change things? Do you think the time is coming?
Yes, absolutely. That's what's happening in a lot of industries at the moment. And it will also happen in banking. It is also happening in banking. That's why the neobanks are growing fast. That's why, well, the buy now, pay later solutions in the Amazon checkout portal and in the e-commerce portals are doing so well. And doing so well, not in terms of per se that they are super responsible, but there is a lot of demand for them. And what you see is that the customer appreciates this very much. It makes their life easy. It makes their lives accessible to finance. What I strongly favor is that everybody who does this, every company who does this, should do it responsibly. So, no, it's not a sales tool, it's a tool to help your customers live their lives and build their businesses better. And I truly see and I truly believe that also the traditional banks, who indeed, like you rightfully say, used to be in the position that they demanded the rules for the market, now are more followers and will follow also in this matter. Because, like I said before, it's a true category shift, and either you follow it or you will be out of business.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. Okay, so now to put that into the real world, could you share with us a story of someone who you might have worked with or someone you've just both saw who was really affected positively by banking 5.0?
Yeah, so I gave the example of Emma and Anna already, the twins. We also see a lot of benefit in small businesses, in the small business market, where, for example, in countries like Indonesia, Brazil, India, a lot of women are financially included, but start their own businesses. They start e-commerce portals to sell stuff. And when they want to build their business, they are rejected by any traditional bank because they are not seen by the system. And with our behavioral assessments, the things that I write about in the book and to the system, her behavioral profiles of these women do in a lot of cases show resilience. show discipline, show strong intent. And therefore, our score shows that they are eligible for a loan to build their e-commerce shops. So with this type of scoring, human-centered AI-based scoring, we can approve them and we can ex help them expand their business and build a stable financial life. And that's the exact power of human-centered AI. It is not just classifying groups, but it's empowering individuals with the right behavior to build their lives and businesses.
Yeah, absolutely. And Diedrich, what I'm noticing from our conversation is that you talk a lot about the work you've done in Indonesia, India, Asia as a whole. So I'm left thinking, why is Asia more open to those changes that benefit everyone compared to here in the Western world where we are based?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think it all comes back to the need for it. What we see in Europe and also in the US is that we have a well-developed economic foundation. There's not much poverty. And there's not also for entrepreneurs, there's a lot of sources you can tap into when you need money. So the problem of the unseen by traditional financial ratios is limited in our part of the world. Having said that, we still see there's a very intense access to finance gap for small business lending in Europe and in the US. And so for small businesses, there is a need to shift the lens and be included. Having said that, if you move to Southeast Asia, to India, to Latin America, also to Africa, there's also billions of consumers that have the need for financial inclusion. And the need to build their businesses. And what you see over there is that a lot that all governments actually have kind of the same strategy in supporting their economies to build the middle class customer segments in their countries. So there is a need to see more people that can be included in the financial system to build a stronger middle class than there is in Europe or in the US. And that need is supported by legislation, is supported by financial support for lenders, for neobanks, for, well, super apps to drive this financial inclusion. And also on the consumer and small business side, they are in the same ecosystem, so they trust that the system also is there to help them. So they also apply for these kind of small loans and credit cards to start building their e-commerce portals or other shops. So I think it all comes back to the need. The need is super big in Asia and in Latin America, and is mediocre big in Europe and in the US.
Really interesting. But yeah, thanks for that. I just when we were discussing Kenya, you mentioned those countries. I was thinking, why are we then so resistant here in the West? But yeah, I think that explains a lot. Okay, and then I've got just one final question for you, Diedrich. So the last chapter of your book is titled The Future. So what future do you envision?
Yeah, the future, looking in the crystal ball, is not someone anybody can. But based on my research, if I project the lines of my research towards the future, I see a few things. I see the shift to banking 5.0 that will continue. A future where human-centered AI becomes the new standard in finance, and whether it is to drive inclusive finance or what we have in the West, to reduce risks in your portfolios, because that's a very high need in Western societies like the UK, Europe, and the US, or whether it is to drive customer lifetime value, and where understanding is built into every interaction and inclusion is the norm and not the exception. That's I think where the future is, and that means that we will see a shift in business models. Like I already explained a little bit, the traditional banks are really being disintermediated by the super apps, the mobile wallets, the e-commerce portals, and the neobanks. More than 30% of the global credit volume already goes through the new channels. And that's global credit volume. If you would focus on retail only, so on small business and consumers, then it's over 60% already. And there are parts of the world, like in Latin America, where 80% of the credit volume has been shifted from traditional banking to these new type of channels. So there are new business models that will take over the old banking business model. And in these new business models, it's not only understanding people better, but it's also helping them better. So you will get AI agents that proactively help you build a sound financial foundation for your company, for example, as an entrepreneur. Now you have to figure out everything yourselves. You get a loan or you get not a loan, but it's very reactive. In this new Banking 5.0 world, based on the deep profiles that we have, the companies will help you build your life and build your business. And that all comes, well, will relate into a new financial system that's smarter, that's fairer, and that's more human. And that's where I think the future will be. Finding these kind of directions is something I also think companies have to start with now, because it's a process, it's a journey. It's not that if you think about transformation that it happens tomorrow. You need the process of a few years to really transform your company in everything and make it AI native, make it AI human-centered AI native, and be part and leader in this category.
Yeah, I think we're all hoping for such a more inclusive future. But thank you very much, Diedrich, for your time today. It was a pleasure to speak with you about your book and the amazing insights that you cover, and also the solutions you're proposing to our banking system. And of course, I encourage our listeners to grab a copy of Brilliant Data to read more. But thank you again for your time today.
Most welcome. It was happy to be here. And thank you for having me.
Absolutely, it was a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us today. Make sure you keep an eye on our social media at Lit Publishing on LinkedIn, X, Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook for more information about new books and podcasts with thought leaders. See you next time on Lit Radio Podcast.